Before we start the show, we wanted to welcome our newest patron, Michael Sachs. Thank you for supporting the show. If you enjoy the show and want to donate a couple bucks, please visit patreon.com/coachyourbrainsout. Thanks.
Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
What helped you in the transition? And I guess what were some of the initial challenges of, you know, joining this new team at the end of the quad? Some of the things that you went through and did to help it be successful.
Good question. Can you rephrase it again, please?
Yeah. So you joined a new team. So I think like a lot of coaches, they maybe a college coach, there's a previous coach and they're coming in and there was, you know, different relationships and a different way of doing things. So just kind of how you came in and made that transition, you know, to a new team, the end of a quad. I guess what challenges you dealt with as you did it.
Okay. I think stepping in for this team was really, really scary for me because they'd had so much success and they seemed, you know, I mean, they were a medal favorite, no doubt. And it felt like all I could do was either, I don't know. It was scary. Fear of failure. If they don't win, is it because, you know, I had failed as a coach or just all those different things racing through my head too. And I made the decision going, well, I could face my fears and, you know, go for the gold with this team or, you know, be safe and not do it. And so, yeah, I stepped into it with the mindset that like, okay, they have a winning formula here. They do know what they're doing. I need to step back. I need to learn from them. What works for them? How do they function as a team? And not just get in there and start stirring the pot and like changing things because they had a proven successful record. So I spent a lot of time kind of just observing and trying to get to know like what makes them tick and like what drives them and just a lot of observation, a lot of it, and trying to learn from them as much as possible. And it was pretty rocky, you know, at times. Like I think they wanted a lot more out of me as far as like in practice feedback or whatnot. And I'm a coach who likes to, I'm pretty analytical. Like I'll watch a practice and then I want to watch a video and I want to watch it again and again and figure out, oh, okay, this is what it is. And I want to be a little more sure about it as opposed to just impulsive in the moment. And so there were some rocky points with my approach with that too. But I think one of the big differences too is I'm a strong believer in systems and just having, you know, options, a lot of different options. And I think when I was explaining this to Jeff Nygaard, he was like, oh, you like a plan B? And I'm like, huh, like, yeah, I guess you're kind of right. Like having plan B and sometimes even plan C for, you know, how things are going and a lot of tools in the toolbox. And so that was one thing that I think going into it, they played a lot on feel. And one thing that I brought to them is feel is great, but what happens when we don't feel it's there? Like, can we like have these, you know, different options of in our attack, the onto option, setting at different locations on the net. And they were already exploring a lot of different defensive systems. So just trying to expand on that sort of stuff and get clarity and just get better at those things. So it was nothing like, I didn't want to change anything that they were doing. I really just wanted to add to it and just help them have a plan B, really.
Angie, you talked about, you know, being analytical and wanting to be really like solid with what you're saying and not being impulsive with the feedback that you're giving. Is that something that, you know, you talked about kind of like a rocky transition with them wanting feedback and practice and you're like kind of maybe holding back and wanting to pump the brakes a little bit. Is that something that you were able to articulate to them at that point where you were expressing that, or did it take some you know, kind of like uncomfortable conversations of them saying what they want, you kind of saying like, this is how I do it. And, you know, how did that go?
Yeah, there were some rocky ones, but each rocky one presented some more clarity. So like, you know, there were a handful of those really, just really uncomfortable practices and moments or whatever. But once we got past them, it got a lot better. And then when it would kind of happen again. And then once it was really, really, really uncomfortable, it got a lot better. So there were quite a few of those. And really, you know, I can't give enough credit to John Crowley too. I mentioned him before, but my coach, the coach of coaches, because he helped me figure out how I am and how I can relate to the players, and how, you know, like kind of just figuring out how we communicate, how we hear things, how we each individually learn and try to maximize those things. So how can I improve as a coach so that, you know, April's very direct and I'm clearly talking in circles right now. So how can I get to the point faster? And so that, you know, she is like, yeah, okay, just tell them, just get to the point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's really valuable for people to hear, because I mean, in my experience, like discomfort and uncomfortable conversations are really important for getting to the heart of the matter. Mm-hmm. But I think for a lot of people looking at your relationship and dynamic with Alex and April, people probably just thought like, oh, she's just kind of like went right in there and it was this honeymoon right from the jump and they won gold medal and it was just like this amazing experience. And it's cool for me to hear that there was some feeling out and some maybe like herky jerky moments with all of you kind of feeling out what was working or not.
Oh, for sure. It's, you know, nothing I think is ever as smooth or easy as it might seem on the outside. But yeah, I mean, we had a lot of growing pains for sure. And, you know, still have them. So
yeah, that's cool.
But I think it's really important too, because I've learned so much from them. I mean, it's incredible, just about excellence. And like you know, hopefully I helped them, you know, along the way, just as much as they helped me. That's all I can kind of hope for, but it's been a very rich experience. That's for sure.
That's cool. Well, and speaking of, you know, transitions and feeling out new roles with the Dutch program, you were an assistant coach. And were there any changes that you had to make when you were stepping into this head coaching role with Alex and April?
Well, the way the federations function are so incredibly different. You know, with the Dutch, it's a coach-driven program. So it functions entirely different than a player-driven program here, where the, you know, ultimately the players are making the decisions and driving the direction. So it was a little bit of, you know, I was used to really kind of taking charge of planning and a lot of different areas. And, you know, when coaching, there wasn't a whole lot of pushback. It was just, it was very a different dynamic. And I stepped into this role, I think pretty intimidated to, you know, to be honest, to coach April specifically, just, you know, already a two-time Olympic medalist was intimidating for me. And she assured me that she wouldn't have put me in the position if she didn't believe I could do it or trust me or all that. So it just took some time to, you know, to work through, which I think is just totally normal, but like how you function, what's the culture, what's the expectations, just all that kind of stuff. It was a huge learning experience as far as like, how does it work here? Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. How can I best support you? And yeah, it's rocky. That's really all I can say is, you know, I feel like I fumbled a lot of the time, but, you know, gave it everything that I had.
You mentioned, you know, April a few times and the word excellence came up. I guess I'm curious, what did you observe and like, what are the qualities of excellence? Like what would emerge if you're describing her excellence?
Well, I think with both of them, they are never satisfied. So I don't think we ever had a practice that they walked away from without saying, this has to get better. This has to get better. You know, like identifying different areas, you know, it wouldn't matter if they just gave somebody a beat down, but a certain area still needed to get better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would be like, wow, well, I thought it was pretty darn good. You know, there was a lot of that for sure. And just the commitment to the daily approach, it never, ever faltered from like arriving at practice and the preparation and the intensity level. Never a day off, never a day of just goofing and joking around and relaxing. It was business, there to work and high level all the time.
How did they balance the, because if you go down that tunnel of like, it's not good enough, it can be dark and can be debilitating. Like, was there moments of enjoying the successes? Like, was there a balance of the two, or are they just constant, like nothing's good enough?
I think there has to be a little bit of balance. I remember back when it was announced that they were officially qualified for the Olympics, but the qualification wasn't quite over yet. There still was, I think this happened before Cancun, right after Doha. So they knew they were qualified. They knew they were going, but they didn't want to relax at all. And I thought it was important that, hey, congratulations, like you did something really, really hard and you should be really proud of yourselves and celebrate this moment. Like, let's take a moment and just say, yeah, well, job well done.
Yeah.
And I mean, it might've been just about that length. And then they're like, we can't relax, you know, we cannot relax. We can't let up because if we let our guard down, you know, they're right back to business.
That's impressive. I mean, I could see with April, she's already played in two, but I mean, Alex is what tried to qualify for two already and, you know, didn't get selected to the team. So it seems like it'd be such a huge deal. And then taking on a new sport, but man, that's just shows how they're just in another class. So last time we had you on, you talked about this idea of Dutch directness, and it definitely stuck with me, partially because I love the Dutch and that's kind of a catchy term. And it sounds like April and Alex already used it, but I think a lot of Americans aren't as direct. I guess how did Dutch directness come up as a team? How did you implement it? How did they implement it?
Well, I actually think that the two of them are very good. I mean, they're direct with each other.
They're like Dutchies.
They are like Dutchies. It's pretty impressive. And so I didn't have to bring any of that to them. In fact, you know, I think they helped my evolution of, you know, trying to become more and more direct, which still needs a lot of work, but yeah, it's they could be Dutch, but in a different way too, though. Like they're direct about what they need, you know, like on the court, but it's done in a different way. It's hard to kind of describe, but they're very thoughtful of how the other might feel about it as well. So
still empathetic.
They're empathetically direct. Whereas I think sometimes the Dutch might lack the empathy part of it.
just cold hearted. Just here it is.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
Angie, were there any other things that you took from the Dutch program and implemented without April and Alex?
Well, I think I learned so much there, you know, just from the goal setting and your planning and team around the team working together with people. And you know, that's something that was one of my favorite parts of the job is working with all the different contributing practitioners, you know, whether it's the medical staff or the strength coach or someone supporting, you know, like I just love the team environment and making everybody feel part of the team. And I think that's probably something from the Dutch too, because I feel like the way our sport is in the US, you're kind of on an island. You're just, you know, a coach by yourself, and a lot of teams don't really work together. So that was one thing that was important to me, is to bring everybody who they're working with together and let's all be on the same page with everything and be one big team. And I think that's, you know, that's to the athlete's benefit too, because then you don't have, you know, like something happened in the gym and you don't know on the court how to compensate for it, or, you know, like just with communication, you can eliminate a lot of different potential issues.
Big picture question. Do you see the US adopting more of that, the model of being a little bit more cohesive between different teams within the national team system? That's a loaded question.
Yeah. You know, with NCAA and the way that it functions there, I think in the future it could work. It's going to take a culture change, you know, for sure, just the way people are used to doing things. But there's a lot of benefit towards moving in that direction for, you know, like for coaches too. On the beach, it can be extremely lonely, and without having an assistant coach or other people to even challenge you,
yeah,
it can be really, really hard. And how do you get better? But having like a coach pool, or, you know, colleagues, you know, where you can just push back on different ideas and learn from each other. Like, I think that's just such a huge benefit that then will reflect in the athlete's performance as well, because we're going to have better coaches. So I hope that it does move in that direction. I don't know, you know, how long that will take, but I think it's more fun for coaches as well.
Yeah, that's a really bright and sunny way of looking at that. I think that's really cool.
That's Angie. So how did the scouting differ between, you know, the Dutch and then working with April and Alex? Obviously, you know, I don't think there was a blocker as physical as Alex. I don't know, I guess, is there just like, yeah, here's the info and here's how we're going to do it? Or do you really consider kind of the individual, you know, abilities of each team that you're working with?
Well, April and Alex do a lot on their own as well. So like with the Dutch, the coaches would mostly come up with the game plans. With April and Alex, it's a full collaboration. So basically what it comes down to is sharing information, and then they decide on the game plan. I mean, they're the ones who have to execute it. So, you know, I think it's really important that they believe in it, and, you know, they feel like they're in control of it. Of course, we're all going to watch. We're all going to talk about the things that we see and what can work and just bounce around ideas. But ultimately, with those two athletes, they, you know, have the final say on what their game plan is going to be.
Love that approach. I'm sure the buy-in from them, and yeah, I guess the commitment to the plan is so much higher with that sort of autonomy. But what would happen if you saw something pretty different than they did? If that did happen, what would you guys do?
Are you talking before a match or
after? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you guys, like, you do your scout, they do theirs, you guys come together, and you're seeing something like, I think we should serve this player, and they're, you know, on a different sort of game plan.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that happened a few times where the way I approach it is just keep an open mind that if it doesn't work, maybe try this, you know, think about this, this, and this, you know, like, don't get stuck. Don't get married to your plan. That's kind of something that we would say, you know, like the game, you know, it can change and it evolves, and learn as you go, learn and apply. So if something, you know, if a player is completely going against a tendency, don't just wait for it to happen, you know, adjust. So learn, and then apply against them. And that was kind of always, we never really got into like a disagreement about like what should or shouldn't happen. It was more just maintaining an open mind about the possibilities and having a plan in place if things change.
Yeah. Sounds like a collaboration. I guess you've been with the team, is it a year and a half, 2 years?
No, we started in September of 2020.
Yeah.
We did a little bit of like, you know, a conference call here or there to kind of get to know each other before that, but we weren't in the sand until.
Okay. So we're just approaching 1 year as a team. As you reflect on the year, obviously a monumental year, what stands out as areas for improvement for just your personal growth as a coach?
What stands out for sure is just that much faster get to know the communication style of the athletes and figure out kind of what they need and how to communicate with them better, faster. That's something that I learned in a coaching course the NTCLEP program, which is, you know, through the USOC. It's a mouthful, but it's a coaching program that, John, have you taken that program? No. It's coaches across the USOC who, from all different sports, but one of the things that we learned, and it's from the People Academy, but it's called the DISC profile, and you've heard of that. So it kind of identifies your style of communication and how you can apply it to like learning about your athletes and how to communicate with them more effectively. And I think that's a tool that I will definitely continue to use, and it will speed up that process. Whereas, you know, I kind of felt like, oh, just listen and learn. And it would take quite a bit of time, like pushing boundaries or whatnot. But now I feel like I have a better grasp on how to kind of quickly identify that and start moving. But I have to overcome my own insecurities as well with like the directness and, you know, just being more sure of myself. And who cares if I'm wrong, you know, just say it and just kind of get over that part of it. So that's a big area for me, just being more assertive.
And then Angie, what areas are you just nailing right now? Are you just, what areas are you dominating? Be assertive with us. Come on, dominate the conversation, Angie.
I think I do very well at team, working with a team, you know, just bringing people together and trusting the experts, you know, so.
I would agree.
And that's, you know, and I love that part of it too, because I'm a team player and I want everybody to thrive in there and feel empowered. So, yeah.
You're like a blender. Like you're a blender coach. Like you just get everyone in there, you just blend it all up and
you get a nice smoothie.
I like.
All right. Angie, I've got a couple listener questions. One is from April R. from Costa Mesa. This person was wondering what was the most difficult part of coaching the A team?
The most difficult part for me was expectation. So for me, it was getting over fear of failure. If I don't win a gold medal, does that mean I've completely failed and go hide in a hole? And
Okay. Next listener question from Alex.
Wait, sorry. Let me follow up on that. So was it more relief when you guys won, or was it joy, or what did it feel like?
Honestly, I don't know if you guys, so April has her blog and she wrote a few articles over the past couple months or whatever. And actually before the Olympics, there was an article about her that she had posted, and her perspective is just unbelievable. And it blew me away. Like the first time, you know, like she works so incredibly hard and she is so, so committed to, like I said, the whole excellence journey, but her perspective on it is so balanced, you know, like she's going to do everything in her power to know that she did everything that she could do to achieve her goal. But if she doesn't, then she's fine. She knows she did everything. Like she's, you know, it is what it is. Like, and hearing her, like her reading her article and hearing her words and her talk about it, and then this other article that she referenced, it was, you know, written by somebody else, but on her, they really blew my mind and put me at ease quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But still, it's, you know, I can't help myself just feeling that pressure still, but kind of, yeah, it just blew me away, her whole perspective on it. It was really, yeah, they're special people. They really are.
For sure.
And then Angie, another listener question from Alex K of Manhattan Beach. What was your favorite part of the Olympic experience? It's hard hitting questions.
I like our listeners.
My favorite part of the Olympic experience. There were a couple of really fun moments, but I mean, watching them play so outstanding was such a fun feeling. Like it was like the highest of highs and like just a rush just to watch them. Like they were brilliant. And I think the Swiss match, like that match in particular, the semifinal match, and then my heart racing in the gold medal match, like, and it just felt out of body. And obviously, you know, like, that was so incredibly amazing. But then also, before the games even started, we were walking around the village and just exploring and just checking things out. And that was just really awesome too. Like, just to kind of be there and see how relaxed they were, because I was not relaxed. I was just like, what is, you know, fake it and hide, you know, just pretend I'm cool. And yeah, it was incredible.
That's awesome. So are we going to see this team back in 2024?
Gosh, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. You'll have to ask them. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. Well, it's only 3 years away. I guess there's 2022 there's still 2021 to enjoy. True. We got Chicago this weekend, but yeah, man, what an amazing performance, an amazing job done by you and the team, and definitely made us proud as Americans to watch and follow along. And congratulations on everything you guys did.
Well, yeah. Thank you guys so much. It's the support was seriously amazing. Like, it felt so good to see all the messages from people, and just like, I know it meant a lot to the girls too. Like, it was pretty incredible. And just, you know, COVID, not having friends and family be able to attend, that made it all the more special, just to hear the messages and feel the support.
Angie, I told you this in person, but I didn't get a chance to say it on the show, that I've never seen a team more prepared for a tournament than that. And to watch you guys go through that tournament was just, it was a spectacle. Like, from the jump, it's like, there's no way anyone else is winning this tournament, just because of, like, not from just a straight talent perspective, but you could see, like, the level of work that was put in behind the scenes by the athletes, by the coaches, by the athletic trainers, by strength coaches. It, like, you could just see everyone's hand in what was going on screen. And it's just really awesome to see that from a coaching standpoint.
Oh, thank you. There were a lot of people who contributed to it, and yeah,
you could see that.
Everybody did an awesome job, man. Yeah.
But only one leader, Angie Akers. So.
We tip our hats to thee, Angie.
Yes, we do. Yes, that was awesome.
You guys are awesome.